Welcome to the LDN Radio Show, brought to you by the LDN Research Trust. I'm your host, Linda Elsiegood. I have an exciting lineup of guest speakers who are LDN experts in their field. We will be discussing low-dose naltrexone and its many uses in autoimmune diseases, cancers, etc. Thank you for joining us. This show is sponsored by Mark Drugs, who specialise in the custom compounding of medications, assuring that the client gets the proper prescriptions for their unique needs and conditions. They work with practitioners, integrating knowledge and treatment of experts to create comprehensive health plans. Visit markdrugs.com or call Roselle 630-529-3400 or Deerfield 847-419-9898. Today my guest is Dr. David Zeiger, who's a DO, an integrative medicine practitioner from Chicago in Illinois. He treats both chronic and acute illnesses and neuromuscular pain. Thank you for joining us today, David.
Thank you for having me, Linda. I'm looking forward to talking to you.
Well, first of all, could you tell us about you? Who is Dr. David Zeiger?
Well, I was originally boarded in family medicine about 30 years ago, and I recently got boarded in integrative medicine as a specialty about 2 years ago. I've been practicing family medicine, functional medicine, and for the past 30 years, as well as doing things in neuromusculoskeletal medicine, including osteopathic manipulative medicine, and using techniques called prolotherapy or neural therapy to treat chronic pain syndromes. So getting into a variety of different therapies in my practice gives me a large toolbox to work from as I work with my patients.
Mm-hmm. So what the age range of your population of patients do you treat? Do you do from the cradle to the grave, or do you do adult medicine?
It's primarily adult medicine, but I do see occasionally some adolescents, some preteens. Mostly I see patients from, about 20 to about 80. I've had a couple 90-year-old patients in my practice, and it varies, I would say, more toward more of a female population than a male population, because I do a lot of hormone therapy in my practice for menopause, perimenopause, infertility, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, etc.
Mm-hmm. And out of interest, I know you prescribe LDN, and this is why I'm interviewing you, but do you use LDN for your patients with fertility problems?
I haven't started using it in that direction yet. I've got a few patients who are interested in that, and so once they get back to me, I will. But what I have found LDN to be very, very useful for is obviously a lot of autoimmune type of conditions: Hashimoto's thyroiditis, lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, and lately I have been seeing a lot more patients with what's called small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. Mm-hmm. And with people who have a variety of different gastrointestinal dysbiotic syndromes, leaky gut syndrome, the inflammation thereof, and I found LDN to be very useful in those patients.
And you were saying about mainly females. I think it's usually the female population that has the most autoimmune diseases as well. I think with MS, they were saying it was 3 women to 1 man. So that is probably why as well. So when you find a patient who is suitable for LDN? How do you go about treating that patient?
Well, what happens is I generally spend about a good hour, okay, with a new patient to get a complete history, do a very thorough physical, literally from head to toe. There's a variety of baseline laboratories that I may do to try to find out, you know, what are some of the targets that I need to go after, be it dysbiotic gut, be it hormonal imbalance, be it inflammatory markers. And what I will then do is put everything together for the patient as to explaining, these are the targets that I feel are probably the most significant avenues for, you know, therapy, and using various different tools, LDN being one of them, I will then broach the patient with the information. I like to refer them to the LDN network website and to other, you know, sources of information. So I think that, like, here in the States, there was a company that used to sell men's clothing, and the owner of the company would said, our best customer is an educated customer. And so I feel that the best patient is an educated patient. And I feel that as a physician, it's my responsibility and my calling to help educate and guide patients toward the therapies that I think that are probably the most beneficial to them, and answer all of their questions that I possibly can.
Mm-hmm. What dose do you start your patients off at?
I like to start usually at around 0.5 milligrams, and then slowly titrate them up to around 4.5 over a period of about 14 to 21 days, depending upon how they respond. I haven't had the use of microdose low-dose naltrexone, though I have a few patients, like I said, that are currently in my practice where I think I may be considering that as a beginning point for their therapy.
Mm-hmm. So you said that you have patients that take it for thyroid conditions, and we have learned that some patients who are on thyroid medications have to reduce the thyroid medications because the LDN makes it work more effectively. Have you found that in your patients?
Most definitely. I have had a number of patients who have Hashimoto's thyroiditis for 15, 20 odd years, and they have been to a variety of different practitioners, including integrative practitioners, and their antibody levels have been like in the thousands. And what I've often found with many of the patients with autoimmune conditions, and I'll specifically talk about Hashimoto's for a second or so, is that about 70 to 80% of the patients with Hashimoto's have a dysbiotic gastrointestinal system. They have SIBO, or they may have parasites. They may have protozoa, worms, I found in one patient, and that by going after these organisms and then treating the resultant inflammatory condition using low-dose naltrexone as well as other tools, nutraceutical tools, I have been able to lower the antibody levels of these patients, improve their symptomatology, decrease their dependence on medications for thyroid over a period of several months. I have several patients where I've actually normalized their levels, where they have no antibody levels anymore.
Mm, and that's amazing.
Their thyroid, their TSH has gone down to normal. Mm-hmm. Their T4 and free T3 have all normalized. Their stamina energy is significantly improved. And many, many things that were tied into that, clinical-wise, have also significantly improved.
Mm-hmm. I mean, to come off medications, you know, is a box with a big tick in it, isn't it? You know, to achieve
yes,
that, it's really something. And have you found, especially with SIBO and thyroid, well, any autoimmune condition, diet, how important do you regard gluten in the diet?
Well, in SIBO, Dr. Mark Pimentel, okay, from UC San, I think it's UC Davis, I hope I'm getting that correct, has been doing research on SIBO for probably about 25 odd years or more, and they have published some of the most seminal articles on this, that diet is one of the hallmarks of therapy. And when we look at what the components of that are, it revolves around, you know, the antigen load from things like gluten and casein from dairy, zein from corn, and those are the things that can be major autoimmune triggers in many of these patients.
Mm-hmm. And how long would you say your patients take to notice any improvement?
Generally, when I start working with a patient, after we've gotten the labs test, and they started to do the I like to use what is commonly referred to in functional medicine as the 4-R program, where you remove, replace, reinoculate, rebalance, etc. The flora and the fauna of the gut, as well as helping the parenchyma of the gut, or the gut lining itself, to repair itself. I find that I can usually start seeing results in patients anywhere between 6 to 8 weeks, okay, mm-hmm. within a program.
Wow.
That they start noticing stamina, energy, less gas, less bloating, improve, you know, brain fog, significantly improving, inflammation in joints, improving. And I had one fellow who had been suffering from chronic urticaria for years, and his rashing, his hives were resolving after about 6 weeks for the first time in years.
Wow. And have any of your patients notified you of any adverse side effects?
You know, that's definitely on a case-by-case basis, but I would say the major adverse effects that I see of low-dose naltrexone is a couple things. Number one, the vivid dreaming. Sometimes patients will say, I've never really remembered my dreams, or now I'm remembering my dreams, and these are really pretty intense, or they're in color. The other thing is there's sometimes some of a soporific or sleep, you know, spillover the next day where they might feel kind of groggy. That usually is short-lived. Gastrointestinal side effects are usually very minimal, and usually due to people who kind of like, you know, I recommend people taking some food, you know, like a little snack at bedtime with a good 8 ounces of water with any sort of medication to sort of mitigate the problems. Where some people may have hypochlorhydria, where they're not able to break, you know, tablets and things down as well.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from that, I haven't had any other major problems, headaches, or some of the other symptoms that some people complain about, simply because I really try to warn my patients ahead of time what to expect, and if they had any issues, give me a call right away. Don't wait, and I can usually handle like any minor kinds of things and address those issues right away.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say the average dose is? I know you said you try and get them up to 4.5. Do all your patients get up to 4.5, or do some stick at a lower dose?
I've had a number of patients stick around 2 to 2.5 milligrams, and they seem to, you know, benefit quite well at that dosage.
Well, exactly what we've found. It's not the higher the dose, the better the benefit. It's really unique and individual per person, isn't it? You know, some people do really good on 2 and they go up to 3, they don't feel as good. And by going back, they feel fine. Have you treated any cancer patients? Sorry, butting in there.
You know, I haven't had any cancer patients in my practice at this time. Generally, there are a couple practices out there that have been dealing a lot more with integrative approaches to cancer. And so generally what happens is that I will get a patient and they will come in, they say they want sort of a functional medical approach to, you know, some relative nutritional deficiencies, and they may have some other issues, you know, some musculoskeletal issues that I may treat. And then what I may do is say, look, you know, if you want more of integrative, well-balanced out program, I'll refer them out to these other practices that specialize in integrative cancer therapy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you had to pick a condition, would you say thyroid is the condition you treat the most in your practice?
You know, that's very interesting that you mentioned that. Yes, I would say a good 70% of my patients, you know, have a Hashimoto's thyroiditis.
Wow.
That I've been picking up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very rampant.
That's high, isn't it? What do you put that down to, that number of patients?
You know, that's interesting because I began sort of seeing Hashimoto's probably about 20 years or so ago. And I remember when I was in medical school, we were taught that this was a very rare condition. But when I got out in a practice, I started finding that it was much more common. And that actually about close to, 20% of the patients, that have hypothyroidism have had undiagnosed Hashimoto's. And the reasons for that, you know, were always something that I was curious about, finding. And so one of the things that I started looking into were things like, what are the possible autoimmune triggers? I mean, we know from the Human Genome Project that only about 12% to as much as maybe 18% of diseases are actually genetic in nature. The rest of diseases are really are due to epigenetic causes. And so what are those epigenetic causes? Basically, we're looking at things like, various different pathogen infestations, microorganisms like Blastocystis hominis, certain protozoa, candida, heavy metal, exposure is another factor in there. Stress on the immune system is another factor. Nutritional deficiencies, another factor. So, unfortunately, over the past, 60, 70 years or more, the population has become more and more exposed to these kinds of pathogenic factors. And I think this is what's causing a lot of the autoimmune conditions that we see today.
Mm-hmm. And do you think people seek you out, word of mouth, that you're the man to see if you have a thyroid condition?
That's what I hear.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So there are people with thyroid conditions, of course, and then you've got the people with the chronic fatigue syndrome, ME. How do you find the ME, chronic fatigue syndrome people compared with the thyroid? Because I have found people with fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, are really ultra sensitive to all drugs, LDN included.
Yeah. Well, what I've come to see is that many of these conditions have a lot of things in common. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I guess the rubric that I would use, since I'm also trained in homeopathy, is, you know, inflammation, mm-hmm. you know, and what causes this inflammation. And as I mentioned just a moment ago, that there are many triggers, epigenetic triggers for this. And so depending upon, you know, the person's, individual, you know, biochemical makeup, they will be more prone to the manifestation, okay, of various different diseases, be it thyroid or be it adrenal or be it, SIBO. And so, what I find is that when I work with a patient, is I'm looking for those factors that will create an inflammatory condition in the patient, and then based on their family history, based on the physical findings that I find, I can then hone that into various different subsystems or organ systems that I need to focus my attention on, be it the thyroid, be it the adrenal, be it, you know, hormone imbalances between, you know, estrogen, progesterone, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, the neuromuscular pain that you treat, and as you were just saying there, how inflammation plays a big part in all these conditions, what technique do you use to treat neuromuscular pain?
Well, I'm an osteopathic physician, okay, so mm-hmm. I've been trained in manual medicine, okay, and so using osteopathic manipulative therapies, okay, I use that modality. I was also trained in medical acupuncture, mm-hmm. So I use that from time to time. Furthermore, if there are, certain other kinds of, let's say, ligamentous instabilities, that I will use a technique called prolotherapy, which is an injection technique to regenerate the ligaments. And the interesting thing is that, you know, we talk about, you know, autoimmune conditions. Well, one of the things that we find with, SIBO patients or some of these other conditions that you may have a variant of Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is a genetic inherited weakness of the ligaments that can also be related to certain inflammatory factors, okay, mm-hmm. in the body that can be triggered by various different things that I've just mentioned. So looking at all these different kinds of moving parts, you know, you kind of try to get a picture of what is the most, you know, impactful on the patient's health, and then focus on those things that you can start to build a foundation of health for them.
Mm-hmm. You were saying that you, an osteopath. I have seen a chiropractor. What is the difference between the two?
That's a very good question. Well, chiropractic actually evolved from osteopathic medicine. Okay. Andrew Taylor Steele, who was the founder of osteopathic medicine back around the 1800s, developed osteopathic techniques. And a fellow by the name of Palmer was a student of A.T. Still. And then he was also at that time a hypnotist. And he went off and founded chiropractic. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the evolution of the two professions sort of had a certain amount of parallelism between the two of them. The difference between chiropractic and osteopathy is that osteopathic medicine basically maintained all of traditional allopathic medicine. As a matter of fact, osteopathic medicine was the first medical profession to incorporate X-ray, okay, into the diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Osteopathic medicine, developed various different surgical techniques and, prescribed medication. So as an osteopath, I have an unlimited license to practice medicine and surgery, whereas a chiropractor has a limited license to practice basically manual medicine. They cannot give injections. They cannot deliver babies. They cannot do ICU medicine. Although some chiropractors now are kind of like trying to become what they call internal chiropractors, internal medicine chiropractors, and it's more of a functional medicine, but they cannot prescribe, hypertensive, antihypertensive medication. They can't prescribe, antibiotics, those kinds of things that I, as an osteopathic physician and surgeon, can.
Right. I have MS, and when before I was diagnosed and different things kept going numb, and I saw a chiropractor, but he had this way of running his fingers down my spine and would say, "Does it hurt here?" And he would press really hard with his thumbs, and it's like, oh yes. But then he would also get hold of your neck and twist it to the side till it cracked, and I didn't like that put me off.
In osteopathic medicine, palpatory techniques are highly developed. Okay,
mm-hmm.
In being able to feel for joint mobility, tissue texture changes, is this inflamed? Is this boggy? Is this hard? I can tell you that when we are assessing a patient structurally, those are the skills that we use, with our hands. Because we're taught to use them in that way, and then also to use our visual perception of, like, how does a person walk, how do they stand, how do they sit, how do they and then listen to the patient, are they talking? So we're basically incorporating all of these other skills of palpation, percussion. Auscultation, which is hearing, as any other doctor does, any other physician does, and then saying, well, here we understand the biomechanics of the body. So when we look at how the shoulder moves or the hip moves, and then getting into finer detail within the cranium of the head. So cranial osteopathy, okay, which has been around for 80 years or more, is where we can actually palpate the very subtle motions of the movement of the cranial bones. These things don't fuse until death or certain disease states. And cranial osteopaths are able to determine, how well they are functioning, how the different bones are functioning in relationship to one another. Because if you were to look inside the head and you look at the, you take off the top of the head and you look down in the brain and you see the brain sort of sitting on top of what they call the tentorium, which is like these membranes. Well, all the nerves that come off the brain go through the membrane, which is a ligament, and then go down through like little holes in the skull down into these, like the cranial nerves that go into the eyes or the nose or down to the neck. And that if there is head trauma, if there is surgical trauma, if there's inflammation or infection, then these membranes can then become twisted, inflamed, boggy, and then cause basically a restriction, of axonal flow, neuroaxonal flow, and thereby affect end organ tissue. And so trained cranial osteopaths look at this when they're treating, children with cerebral palsy or children with autism or people who have had, PTSD or people who have had, chronic headaches, migraine headaches, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've come to the end of the show now, but people who are in Chicago or the Chicago area in Illinois, how do they get hold of you? Where do they go?
You can call my office at 312-255-9444. Again, that's 312-255-9444. And the name of the practice is HealthWorks Integrative Medical Clinic.
Do you have a website for that?
I do. www.healthworksimc.com.
Wonderful. And do you have a waiting list?
I do, but if somebody calls me up and they say, look, I really need to see you, I will get them in somehow.
Oh, well, thank you very much for being such an amazing guest today. I do appreciate it.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to talk to you, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you. This show is sponsored by Mark Drugs, who specialize in the custom compounding of medications, assuring that the client gets the proper prescriptions for their unique needs and conditions. They work with practitioners, integrating knowledge and treatment of experts to create comprehensive health plans. Visit markdrugs.com or call Roselle 630-529-3400 or Deerfield 847-419-9898. Any questions or comments you may have, please email me, Linda, L-I-N-D-A, at ldnrt.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciated your company. Until next time, stay safe and keep well.